Food and oil prices are on the rise, yet Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke downplaying inflation threats. This has my freedom fighters wondering if Big Ben is out of touch with reality. Joining me now are my freedom fighters, FoxBusiness.com senior reporter Dunstan Pryle, The Agenda Project founder Erica Payne, and Reason Magazine associate editor Peter Suderman. First to you, Dunstan. What do you think? Is he out of touch?
You know, I'm going to give the Fed the benefit of the doubt on this one, and here's why. I see them exercising caution in the direction of full employment. We both know that they've got this dual mandate. One is price control. The other is full employment. What they're doing is they're saying, we don't want to raise interest rates right now and blow the economic recovery In that instance, what you're hoping for is that it would threaten the recovery.
Right.
What I'm afraid of is the I've lost my train of thought here. I apologize. But where I was going was the 4 years ago, 5 years ago, Greenspan in the crowd exercised no caution whatsoever.
Yeah,
they let the bubble burst.
You know what?
Burst.
I'll tell you something. You know, Dunstan makes a great point, Erica, and that is this. You know, this dual mandate nonsense. Alan Greenspan blew off because what was going on was unemployment was going down, but he lowered rates anyway, and that really made inflationary fears take off. What do you make of that?
Right. I mean, I put a lot of the blame of the financial crisis right at the feet of Alan Greenspan. He created a bubble that Americans took advantage of, and the disaster ensued. And I'm not a huge fan of Ben Bernanke. I think that in this case, though, what he said is that the inflationary pressures are temporary, which if you look what's happening around the world, it's no wonder oil prices are going up. That's probably not going to, go on.
Peter, has this, the oil prices, commodity prices going up, Peter, is this an issue of the Fed's boomerang coming back to hit them in the head?
Well, look, I think the issue here is that there's just not a lot that central bankers can actually do to solve a food inflation problem. You look at the food inflation is going up. It's going to be about 4.5% this year. It was actually very low in 2009 and 2010, so it's going to be higher this year. But central bankers can't really solve this problem. This is a government problem created by bad government policies. We've got ag subsidies, ethanol subsidies. We're paying farmers to grow, corn for fuel rather than food to eat. And that's what's distorting the food markets.
Yeah. I'll tell you something.
Like Ben Bernanke can really do
and
about
Dunstan,
that.
All these subsidies, also Treasury debt market subsidies with the Fed bond buying, that could go away in June. But I'll tell you something. There's a say in the bond market, Dunstan, and it goes like this. There is no education in the second kick of a mule. In other words, once those rates start to take off, investors lose confidence. Yeah. Watch out. I know Southerner Erica loves that one. But Dunstan, what do you make of that?
Well, I see from the meeting. The response from the meeting, the minutes that we saw today, their QE2 is going to continue. We know that.
You think QE3?
No, I don't see a QE3.
Okay.
I absolutely no QE. I think the recovery is gaining a little bit of traction. They're being cautious about it. No QE3. They're going to let QE2 play itself out. No QE3.
What do you think, Erica? Go ahead.
I think ultimately these policies are largely working. We had a net gain of job gains last month of about 200,000 in the private sector. Things are moving in the right direction. So I think that what the Fed decided and what a lot of people agree with is don't rock the boat right now.
I'll tell
maybe
you something.
Later
you know
we'll
what? But has, Peter, has the Fed put themselves in a corner? In other words, can they ever raise interest rates? Because I'll tell you, one tick up, one percentage point up, $700 billion in interest costs alone on our federal deficit when we're only collecting $2.2 trillion in tax revenues. That's what the credit rating agencies look at. They look at the interest cost, what it costs to service our debt as in terms of what we pull in terms of tax revenues. Doesn't that scare you?
I mean, look, this was always going to be a difficult balancing act for a guy like Ben Bernanke. On the one hand, he and the rest of the Obama administration looked and said, there's not a lot we can do in terms of stimulus. There's no political will to do more stimulus. That's why we got QE2, the second round of quantitative easing. And so they did that instead. They've seen some results that they believe are positive. It looks like I agree that we're probably not going to see QE3. And so they're trying to balance this here. It was always going to be tough. Inflationary fears, you're always going to stoke those with something like QE2, and then hopefully they back off at the end of it.
Dunstan, we saw this in the past, every time a central bank chairman gets too close to the government, gets too close to the White House, the Fed ends up sneezing money into the economy.
Well,
and we're seeing it again. Do you think Bernanke is getting too close with the White House now?
I don't necessarily agree with that. It brings me back to my first point, though, is this whole notion of them being being asleep at the wheel. And I don't agree they are this time. I'm going to defend them a little bit because you can see from the minutes, they know inflation is a problem. They're all over. There's even some healthy debate within the Fed about what they should do, where they should go. The decision right now is to stay with the current policies. 5 years ago, they were completely asleep at the wheel because one, Alan Greenspan was acting as the guru.
Right.
And he helped perpetuate the myth that real estate prices were never going to fall. It was really coming from him, from the top down. He said this was never going to end. We all took his word for it. And how did that work out for us? Not very well.
All right, you get the final word. Next up, the government is in our lives in more ways than we realize. You need a license to drive, to get married, to hunt, and to fish. You know, even in some places, you need them to braid hair. You need a license to arrange flowers. And yet, one of the biggest jobs there is raising children. And that requires no licenses whatsoever, but not so fast. A growing number of websites are advocating the notion that people need licenses to have a baby. Erica, to you first. What do you make of that?
Here's the thing. Sometimes I look around and I see, you know, shows like The Nanny Show where the nanny goes in, and I think, are you kidding me? These people have children. So I'll start there. If we want to fix that problem, we've got other ways to do it, though, unfortunately. So as much as I would love to give a license to somebody to have a kid, it gets in a slippery slope of, so are you going to give them a license to have sex? You know, if they have sex and they get pregnant, are you going to force them to have an abortion or force them to put something up for adoption? It's too big a choice to make.
It is too big. But, Peter, you know, somehow the logic, to paraphrase the judge, rings as clear as a bell. In other words, you have to get licenses to do the most mundane of things, but still we see child abuse cases, you know, still on the rise in many parts of the country. Shouldn't there be something that tells parents to say, stop, don't have a child just yet? I'm not all for government intervention, but when it comes to children, I find it's kind of interesting.
I think the thing that that rings a bell in most parents' heads should be common sense. You know, I mean, if you can't afford a child, if you're not going to be a good parent, if you can't take care of one, then that's the point at which you make the decision. But look, let's forget the slippery slope. Let's forget the legal problems. There are many. This is totally unenforceable. What's the government going to do? Send minders, you know, to follow teenagers and college students on dates to make sure that, you know, that anybody who's in the back of a car isn't engaging in unlicensed procreative activity? It's absurd.
Yeah, well, Dunstan, you know, that is a good point because, look, this could bring a whole new definition to the term nanny state. But is keeping children, you know, keeping the child abuse cases in mind, is this that absurd of a notion?
Liz, you're reading my mind. I have to admit, I'm embarrassed to admit that I spent 10, 15 minutes formulating my answer to this when I got it this morning, when it was emailed to me. And I thought, wow, this is a no-brainer. It's appalling to even think that the government would be able to step in and give license one way or the other. But then all you have to do is open up the newspaper and read outrageous cases of child abuse, oftentimes perpetrated by chronic drug addicts, career criminals, people that if you had with any amount of foresight, you would say this person should not be allowed to have children. But as a society, can we do that? Of course not. A very sticky question. Who's going to decide who gets to have children and who doesn't get them?
Yeah, right. Erica, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the child abuse is a great example. I just think if that's the problem that you're trying to solve, what I would suggest is maybe paying social workers more than $30,000 a year and not having them take on the number of cases that they take on. Because if I have 100 cases as a social worker and they're all the worst of situations, there's no way that I can handle that.
Well, Peter, should we have to have a license to get married then?
When it comes to marriage, you know, the state has a role that it's played
How?
For a long
Why?
Time. It's going to be the state. All I'm saying is that historically,
Why
the state
should the
has
state be
played
involved
that
in licensing
role.
Marriages? Because they're
the
actually
not involved.
The state has played that role for a long time, and
so
it would be
what?
Very
I'll tell
difficult
you something.
To,
Erica,
to
listen.
Get it out of that role.
I hear
role.
What you're saying.
And so, I mean, you know, the main thing that I think if you're going to think about this, that you should concentrate on is making sure that the state doesn't take a further role. Whether or not you think that the state should be licensing marriages now, I think there is a case to be made that the state should not be licensing marriages now, but let's face it, they're not going to stop
All
it.
Right.
But
I
what
hear
we
you.
Don't
you're playing
need
the history.
To see them.
You're a traditionalist, I guess. And Peter, to some degree. But Erica, in Ireland, if you want to get divorced in the olden days, you know, Dunstan appreciates the olden days, whatever that is, you would stand back to back on a divorcing hill and walk away from each other. I would love that to come back again. Why does a government have to get involved in our marriages?
Well, the reason they do is that it's, in essence, a contract. And contracts are enforceable. And it's You think of it as a license, but what it really is two people coming together and pooling their assets. Right. So you've got to have a legal mechanism.
You
brought it on
fighters, genius. I know Dunstan wants to weigh in. It's all about
Well,
money.
No, you, but
all
you right. raised the point.
Go.
Okay.
Sorry, Dunson. That's the show for tonight.